Talib podcast after dark. We haven't had one in a while, and I'm pretty excited about the episode that we're talking about. I am your co-host, Jason, and I'm joined, as always, as usual, with my co-host, Will.
So, it has been a long time since we've been in after dark. It's been bright as shit lately with the sun beaming and all that, but we gotta turn it down a little bit and
we gotta chillax, right?
Yeah, get back in the shade and chill. Just, you know, talk about some stuff that we don't usually talk about in the regular episodes. We want to spend as much time as possible to go in depth on today's After Dark episode. It's a very, very, very tough one, I think.
So our first After Dark was our top 10 animes to recommend. Our second one was Tokyo Ghoul series discussion, and our third one's about Masaki Yuasa, right, Will?
Yeah, it's not like we always go for a formula, but we tend to try and talk about, you know, a director slash producer. We try and talk about an anime studio or a specific series that both Jason and I really like. So, for example, like Tokyo Ghoul, there's going to be new ones upcoming, and then there might be like a thematic one or like a list
right?
of some sort. This one's a little bit different from the ones that we've done before.
Because this episode of the After Dark, we are talking about anime and manga villains.
Right. Diving deep down into the mind of the adversary. And as we all know, I think it's like 90% like correct that villains tend to be more memorable, more impactful than heroes and protagonists of an anime series or a manga.
Really?
I'd say, like, if you were to talk about, like, some of the best characters of all time, a lot of them tend to be villains. Not just within anime and manga, but in just general media, general like live actions as well. At least that's how I feel. I mean, we're talking about the edgelord here, right?
Right. And you're talking, and I'm, like, doubting, and I'm the fluffy one, right? So I guess...
But you would agree, though, to some extent, that like certain series, certain shows, that the villains like have the biggest impact and like the ones that you remember the most out of a show.
Okay, if I had to go by my gut feeling, I would say that when a villain is done well,
that's the key.
Extremely memorable. But when a villain is just, you know, phoning it in or just doing the bare minimum, then it is the most mediocre thing ever.
Yeah.
Whereas if a hero was extremely well written, then yeah, that's great. But if a hero is like dense and stuff, in anime and manga, there are people, MCs, that are just dense as fuck anyways.
And they just shout and friendship their way to the end, right?
Or just like, oh, I'm just going to power up even longer this time.
Yeah. Or things just conveniently fall in place for the protagonist to be able to acquire new skills and new teammates to essentially...
It's like a MacGuffin, right?
Yeah, or... that's why it's like a good hero, yeah, it could be quite a challenge to create, but a really good villain, like that is in itself like masterpiece writing there. But of course, you know, like with every show, like you can't really have a villain without a protagonist. So we wanted to sort of talk about what the purpose of having a villain in a show is, what makes a good villain, and above all, how the importance of a villain in a show actually helps to drive the overall feel, the overall atmosphere, the overall environment of series. So,
In the context of anime and manga. A disclaimer that I would say, which I think we would say about all these types of things, is, of course, the things that we say don't necessarily just pertain to anime and manga. They probably pertain to writing, script writing, you know, just... fiction writing in general, but we will try our best to add our own flair and add a unique spin that pertains as unique as possible to anime and manga specifically. But the things that we talk about is not going to be super revolutionary.
And one more thing we do want to add as well is, because we're talking about specific characters, particularly villains in this episode, it does mean that we're going to be diving deep into certain series and certain characters. Therefore, there are going to be spoilers. We'll go over them in specific later on, but just to let you know, we will let you know which shows, and specific which characters, that we're going to be spoiling.
So right now, we are going to just have a general discussion and have non-spoilery discussions of anime and manga villains.
Yeah.
After the break, we will then give you ample warning that this is the spoiler section. These are the things that we're going to spoil. If you don't want to hear it, come back when you have consumed whatever those series are.
Chances are you have, but we wanted to make absolutely sure, right?
Because spoilers suck.
Yeah. Nobody wants to be ruined of a wonderful ending or a wonderful revelation or a twist in a show. So for this, the beginning part, we're going to do something that I really enjoy, and I'm sure that Jason also really enjoys too, which is making of a great anime villain.
All right. Well, why are villains or, you know, good written villains important?
So whenever we talk about like a lot of animes, a lot of series, or just media in general, usually you would have a central plot. Now, plots, they only really develop if there's conflict, and then through conflict, there's resolution. So what the conflict usually entails is, you know, a big twist in a story, a specific event that changes things. Those events are usually brought on by a specific character. In this case, almost always, it is a villain. Now, having a good anime villain is super important, in my opinion, because it helps to develop story. It helps to build character. It helps to create division and also, you know, pull people together, because an adversary always just throws shit in the fan. Just
right.
Because it stirs up trouble.
If you go by fiction, everything has to have a story. It doesn't need to be a good story for some things, but a story has to be, it's just, that's what it is. A fictitious novel is a story. And as Wilson said, story is usually driven by conflict and change, and or change.
Like, if a protagonist literally had no adversary, nothing to challenge them, where's the progression? How is the story going to grow? How is the character going to grow?
Yes,
it just becomes slice of life at that point. Now, not to say there's anything wrong with slice of life, but those you enjoy for different things. A slice of life usually doesn't have a hero, right? It's just more characters that are living day to day and interacting with their environment and the relationships they build. But if you are to create a story that has to have a good hero, you need to have conflict and an adversary that goes against him.
Right, and there needs to be usually an entity or a person that you can say is the villain. Now, maybe that villain is not apparent, but at least by the time you finished the anime or manga, it is very apparent who the villain is. Because if there is no villain, as Will said earlier, then the only other conflict that can happen, if any, is within the protagonists themselves. So, like, overcoming your fears or something, or, you know, like internal struggles. But yeah, at that,
self-enlightenment and all that.
Right. But at that point, it can only take you so far.
Yeah. Like, imagine, for example, like, we look at the city of Gotham, right? And
in Batman.
Yeah. No, yeah. Joker exists. No other, like, evil villains exist. Would Batman then exist? Would there be a need for Batman?
Well, technically, Batman does exist when the villain...
Exactly.
When Joker does not exist, but...
Well, I mean, like, for any other villain, right? The whole point in having a hero itself is to defeat chaos, to keep control and maintain sanity across the city. But without it, then there's no point. There's no conflict. Therefore, you don't see any of that shit happen. It's just like any other series. Like, for example, you don't have Darth Vader from the Star Wars series. What's Luke going to do? Luke's just going to chill around and just, you know, keep shooting worms or keep, you know, whatever. Like, we literally don't know what he would do.
So therefore, in my opinion, having a good villain is way more important than having a good protagonist, because the antagonist is often the primary reason why the protagonist or the hero's story is even worth telling in the first place. Because then, also, by feeding off of having a foil, you know, someone to as a counterforce, in this case, the villain, the protagonist gets to grow. There is more relatability between the viewer or reader with the characters that are in the fictitious work. And there is just more relatability and empathy that can be, and sort of just like association, that you feel that you're invested in this story. And if it's just about a brooding protagonist dealing with his or her inner demons, I don't think that makes for a great story if that is only all that takes place. There needs to be an external force. There needs to be that kind of conflict that stems outside of the individual protagonist.
Now, just to say villains, though, right? That's not just a straightforward say a villain is a villain and that's it, right? Like, villains just do evil things. They just disrupt order. They cause chaos and they bring death upon people. That's okay. That's some of the things that a villain would do, but that doesn't necessarily mean that someone doing those acts is a villain. Just because someone disrupts order or creates chaos, they're not necessarily a villainous adversary. They might actually have other motives as to why they're doing these things, but it might be for the greater good. It might be for their own purpose and their own ideologies that actually line up somewhat similar to what the protagonist wants. Or maybe it's just something that, you know, they feel is the right way to progress society, but they aren't necessarily doing it in a villainous way.
Okay, so, yeah. I think Will and I, when it comes to when we thought about anime and manga villains, or just villains in general, we came up with, I guess, like four types of these types of adversaries, I think is the best way to put it. They are anti-hero, antagonists, agents of chaos, and villains. Now, obviously, we said many times already that we're talking about anime and manga villains. So we will definitely focus on the last one. But I think it is very important before we say what makes a good villain is what is not a villain. So then we can all be on the same page.
Yep.
So
let's start off with anti-hero.
So an anti-hero is actually not an antagonist, but a protagonist who lacks the attributes that make an a heroic figure, such as nobility of mind and spirit, a life or attitude marked by action or purpose and the like. So it is someone that you might follow in an anime or manga, but they don't have the typical qualities that you would have in a heroic, noble, lawful, you know, idealistic person.
Yeah. So basically imagine two people both have the same objective in which, you know, salvation and, you know, security of human life is key. One person might be doing it the right way, quote unquote, and the other person might be doing it in ways that kind of neglects other people, that actually like brings disadvantage to certain people. But you know what they're doing is for a greater good. They're trying to achieve the same results, just that one person's doing things in a very different manner.
Like the right versus the wrong way, in quotes, basically. And the wrong way is what the anti-hero would do.
And then we move on to the antagonist. So, an antagonist is someone who tends to oppose or essentially fight against another opponent, whether it's the protagonist or someone else involved in the show. Very clearly, they're an adversary. They're an obstacle to that protagonist or that person's progression in a story, in their journey.
Now, the antagonist doesn't necessarily have to be an actual physical thing. It could be an idea, it could be values, it could even be emotions or internal demons. But they have to compete or struggle or cause obstacles for the protagonist. That is what an antagonist is. It's the antithesis of a protagonist. Then you have agents of chaos, which is a person or group of people whose main philosophy is to disrupt the balance of things and cause mischief and or disturbances for entertainment for no particular logic or rationale. This is important because usually, and I'm just going to say usually, villains have a purpose. They have something, a motivation that keeps them going. However, you also will get people, and I think Will mentioned Gotham and Batman. Joker is very much like an agent of chaos to disrupt the status quo, cause mischief. You don't really understand why he does something at all or why he just does it. But he just sometimes does it for no reason. It's just like, I want to do it, so I'll just do it.
And sometimes he leaves behind no victims. Sometimes he leaves death and destruction wherever he walks. the purpose of having an Agent of Chaos, like you said, they may not be, like, they might be doing adversarial things, but that's not necessarily their purpose. Their purpose is just literally, you know, just stir the shit pot and create chaos, literally by being an agent of chaos.
Right. Now, then we come to villains, which we will define kind of as, like, a cruel, malicious person who is involved or devoted to wickedness or crime, kind of like a scoundrel or someone without honor, or a character in a play or a novel, or in this case, an anime and manga, who constitutes an important evil agency in the plot.
Yeah, and unlike the other three, right, anti-hero, antagonist, agents of chaos, villains tend to be villains throughout a series, throughout a show or a movie. They don't necessarily ever change their stance. And if they do, it's probably because they're not like a full-on villain, right? I think you would agree, right? A villain can do anti-hero, antagonistic, or like chaotic things.
Exactly. Exactly. The last definition, which is the villain definition, can incorporate anti-hero, antagonist, and agents of chaos, all three or a combination thereof. But the distinguishing factor is it doesn't work the other way around. An anti-hero is not a villain. An antagonist is not a villain. And an agent of chaos doesn't necessarily mean you're considered a villain automatically.
So, yeah, if you're serving your own purpose and you're achieving certain results, you still may not be a villain.
Yeah, like if you just like to stir the shit pot, that you could just be very well be neutral. You don't necessarily want things to end. You just want to see what things happen or whatever.
Yeah. And this kind of blends into like the next part of our discussion too, though we'll go a little bit lightly on it. But like you can be lawful, right? You can be lawfully evil. You can be chaotically good. You can do certain things that when people see, they're like, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you doing this? But then when you show them the end result, they're like, oh, I guess they were the good person after all. Or it's like, hey, this person is locking up all the bad guys. That's great. Wait, what is he doing with all the bad guys? Oh, he's executing them immediately, publicly? Like, wait, hold on a second. That's not what a lawful person should do. So it's not always clear to find that a villain, an anti-hero, an antagonist, or an agent of chaos has to follow a specific way of carrying out their mission, of creating chaos in the world, of trying to reach a certain achievement.
Now, when it comes to kind of categorizing the types of villains that exist, it's quite a daunting task, to be honest. And Will and I struggled back and forth as to how to go about conveying this to you, the listener, in a way as succinct as possible, as clearly as possible. And of all things, we managed to end on something that is related to Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing games in general. So in Dungeons and Dragons or any other like tabletop role-playing game or any role-playing game, there is something called an alignment chart. And that alignment chart on one side has good, neutral, and evil, and then on the other axis has lawful, neutral, and chaotic. So there are, therefore, because there are 3x3, there is a total of 9 different alignments. And if you are of a certain alignment, it says that your character or the character who has that alignment are therefore have beliefs and attitudes and values and will act a certain way due to these characteristics that they have. So those 9 are lawful good, neutral good, chaotic good, lawful neutral, what they call true neutral, chaotic neutral, and lawful evil, neutral evil, and chaotic evil.
Now, for the purpose of this podcast, we're going to eliminate 3 of them, which is the 3 good alignments, lawful,
neutral, lawful good, and chaotic. Neutral good, and chaotic good.
We're not going to be talking about those 3 because if you're good, you're not doing any villainous or chaotic shit.
Right, because we just said that's malicious, cruel person, like a scoundrel. So if you're good, you technically should not be doing that. Now, lawful is like principle or value oriented. So it doesn't necessarily mean law as in what we conventionally think of as like rules and laws and regulations. It could be, though.
Rather, you're holding up certain things to like a specific standard, what you believe is right. And you carrying out that cause, carrying out that action, it could still be bad. it could still be neutral.
It could still be good.
Exactly.
Now, neutral is...
It's just straight up apathy.
It's just personal need oriented.
Yeah, like you don't care. It's not so much like you're selfish and greedy. You're just not doing stuff for other people because you don't feel a need to.
Unless if you have something to gain from it, it's what you want, but not necessarily. Oh, I want to kill people, so I will do it. No, not necessarily.
It's more like, oh, these people are about to be killed. It's like, okay, so, like, what does that mean? Anything for me? Like, I don't have any affiliation whatsoever. I'm just going to stay out of it.
But if I save these people, they might, you know, give me shelter or they might give me food or money. Then, yeah, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, the interests of others are not necessarily on your mind, but you're trying to deal with your own interests.
And then chaotic is impulse-oriented. So, the agents of chaos, essentially. Now, on the other side, there is good, neutral, and evil. Good being altruistic, but... as we said, we're not talking about that. Neutral is not charitable, but not hindering either. So it's kind of just like, well, I'm not going to go out of my way to help people, but I'm not going out of my way to, like, kill people either. I'm just
doing my own thing, man.
Exactly.
I'm looking out for myself.
And then evil is quite...
straightforward. You're doing some bad shit.
It's like oppressive and killing, basically. All right. So these six alignments that we have chosen... I feel encapsulates almost the majority of villains, not only within anime and manga, but kind of within all mediums. And, Will, do you want to, like, go through each one, or how do you want to go about doing this?
We can go through each one, but we'll kind of gloss over some. I think, for example, like, if we talk, like, true neutral, there really isn't all that much. Lawful neutral as well, it's like, I think it's just very, very specific cases, but... we should at least, you know, dive in a little bit deeper into what a lawful neutral character is like, what a chaotic evil character
right.
is like.
So at least give the definition at the very least,
and
right?
And we may be able to give some examples. We'll give some clear-cut ones, but for the ones that we do need to spoil, we'll save those for the latter half of the discussion.
And I also want to reiterate that just because we believe a certain villain is a certain alignment, or we believe this is the definition of that alignment, doesn't necessarily mean that is the only definition. It might vary and stuff like that. But right now, as we are telling you, this is what we feel is the appropriate and correct one. So, Will, shall we start?
Let's kick it off with lawful neutral.
Yeah.
So a lawful neutral character usually bases things off of lawful context. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean the law itself, but when it comes to adhering specific codes, whether it's like honor or rules or traditions... and if any of those are violated, right, if any of those are kind of crossed and, you know, you can tell, you definitely see someone is not living by the way that you set your standards for, then you would be able to exact whatever action you need to fix that.
I think a very typical, like, live action, so it's not necessarily anime and manga focused, but Yakuzas in Japan, they... are very famously well known for, yeah, they are kind of like the seedy, like people.
They do a lot of bad shit, like racketeering. They do a lot of kidnapping, drug trafficking, human trafficking.
But they believe in honor. They believe in order. They believe in tradition to the point where they would do things that would actually benefit society because that's the way it has been. Or just because... you are like a family member, but you violated this code, this Yakuza code. So you're getting the same downfall that everyone gets, the same punishment that everyone gets. Or, wow, you belong to this faction, but you did something that kind of ruined the reputation of the faction. You have given dishonor upon the factions, this faction. Like the Yakuzas really do follow by that code a lot. And in anime and manga, there is a lot of these, too. I mean, in My Hero Academia, for example, the League of Villains. I don't think the League of Villains is a spoiler to say that they don't seem to be a very good group, like good-natured group. But believe it or not, they actually have a code that they follow. They have rules that they set in place that they won't cross themselves. Except they may not necessarily align usually they don't align with the rules and laws of society in general. That's all. There is another character in My Hero Academia that I don't know if it's a spoiler to mention, Will. What do you think?
We can save that for later.
Right. But needless to say that there's another character who is kind of an adversary, but actually has a very extremely strict code and follows it to a T. So lawful neutral are these people.
Yeah. Most of the time, at least in anime series, villains aren't always going to be nut jobs. In fact, a lot of them are actually very, very smart, very calculating. And that's what makes, you know, villains even more interesting. We're not just seeing that this good guy is going to punch or kick his way out of a certain series. No. We're also seeing that, you know, there are going to be people that have a code of ethics, a code of honor, and they need to stick with it. And you come in there, you come between them and their ideals, their morals, that's when shit gets a little bit messy.
Okay. Now, true neutral is a character that's neutral in every sense of that word and doesn't feel strongly or actively seeks balance or anything. They just kind of are, in a sense, like, is standing idly by and just surviving on their own. In this case, I don't think that a villain necessarily pertains to being true neutral, but sometimes by not being involved, you are considered the villain. You are considered a bad person because you are not involved. So I think in that sense, a villain can be true neutral.
I guess it also depends on how the protagonist squad perceives that particular person, right? Because I wanted to give an example of Mihawk from One Piece. Now, this isn't a spoiler. He does show up in like midway through the first couple hundred of chapters, but he is an adversary. He creates an obstacle for Luffy and his Merry Berry crew. What happens? Well, they have a swordsman on their team, and he says, I'm going to go kick your ass. Nope. Zoro gets his ass handed to him. And you just see that, like, Mihawk, it's like, I am not all that interested in fighting to the death. I'm just here to show you what I can do. And if you do mess with me, this is going to continue going on and on and on. But what he does isn't necessarily evil or chaotic. He is maiming or hurting someone, but not to the point where like he's creating like extreme physical pain or even death upon them. So true neutral is just as much as it's apathetic, it's also just for them not looking at ways to try and benefit somewhere else. It's just them, it's like, okay, I could do this, but what benefit do I get out of it? Why should I care? Why should I do this? And so that's what I think true neutral is. Like, you're just trying to find people who can understand what they want to do, but not necessarily, like, they don't need them to feel too strongly about how they're aligned.
All right. The next one is chaotic neutral. And a chaotic neutral character is an individual who follows their own heart and generally doesn't care about rules and traditions. Although chaotic neutral characters promote things like freedom, it is their freedom that comes first. Good and evil come second to their need to be free. So in this sense, they could be seen, a villain could be seen as chaotic when they are doing something that allows them to be free because it allows someone else to not be free, basically. But they're not necessarily, sometimes they could be on your side, sometimes they'll be on the other guy's side. So it doesn't really, they can flip-flop back and forth. It's what suits them the most. And greed from my Full Metal Alchemist is a very good example of that.
Yeah, the guy is absolutely like a nutcase, right? He's violent, he's strong, he, you know, does whatever he needs to, you know, basically stir up chaos. Deep down, he's not necessarily like the most evil person. He does do bad shit, but again, as we've discussed, does not necessarily make him a villain. So we got to be careful when we're trying to categorize people, because you might think that certain actions are a bit more on the lawful side, some of them are a bit more on the chaotic side, some of them are good, some of them are evil. In the end, that's not necessarily up to me or to Jason to choose. Like, it's going to be like a more sort of objective perspective on why this person is doing certain things, why this person is going about to, you know, create trouble over here is it because he wanted to gain access or gain resources or goods from another side? So as you mentioned with greed, yes, greed is one of those characters where he just starts off being a big old asshole. Just does not give any time whatsoever to any of the protagonists, not even to some of the antagonists as well. But as he starts growing, you can see that his demeanor, the way he talks to people, the way he's changed, it's very, very apparent.
Okay. So that is all the neutrals. So now we go to the evils. And this will be pretty quick. So lawful evil character sees a well-ordered system as being easier to exploit than to necessarily follow. That's pretty self-explanatory. So they do like systems and rules and regulations. But in a way, they kind of like it for the wrong reasons. They don't like it because it promotes order, because they can use it to their advantage to exploit it for their gain. The example, I think, is a spoiler, right?
Yeah, well, I think so. Right. To be fair, though, I would say, okay, neutral evil, in a sense, is... I think neutral evil is one of the most baseline ones because of the fact that you are committing malicious and evil acts, but you may not necessarily know why you're doing it. You may not actually care about why you're doing it. It just so happens that this is what life is like, and therefore I'm just going to act this way. So the example I wanted to give, which is not really a spoiler, but I won't dive deep into names and locations and all that. One of the top 10 animes that I talked about earlier this year, Black Lagoon. Now, Black Lagoon is like a pirate slash like syndicate kind of enclave where all types of mafia and all types of, you know, all these gangbangers go and live out there. Which then means that if you're surrounded by other killers, other thieves, other people who have committed crime, chances are that most of the characters in Black Lagoon are evil somewhat.
Right.
Because the very thing they do in order to gain money, in order to be able to gain progression, comes at the expense of other people.
Right. And to make matters a bit more, I guess, murky, a neutral evil character doesn't necessarily are loyal. They could be just allies in the moment to further their own gain, but at a moment's notice, they'll betray you. Just like, as you said, in Black Lagoon, if everyone is a killer, then, yeah, okay, we're kind of bound together by this loose association or, like, this faction, but if shit hits the fan, I'm gonna bounce. Or I'm gonna murder this person if I want to. So, that is neutral evil.
Now we talk about the last alignment, which is chaotic evil. Now this one, we actually have a bunch of examples of who they are, what they do, and why they're so evil.
So basically, before Will goes into the definition, what you think of the listener as a villain, usually, they are chaotic evil.
Yeah, so in terms of like certain characters, I think, you know, straight away, you can tell this is an evil, evil character.
So what are chaotic evil's like characteristics?
Like, so for them, same thing, evil, right? The outcome for themselves is going to cause destruction. But unlike lawful and neutral, where there is some restraint to how they carry out certain things, how they try and achieve certain results, chaotic evil characters don't give a fuck about rules. They don't care about other people, whether it's their lives or their, you know, their portions of whatever, like of land they own, or maybe even like, you know, trying to sort of achieve their own desires. No, chaotic evil characters do not care for that. They will actually take away those freedoms because that means it's one less mouth to feed, one less person to give water to.
They ain't give no fucks.
No. No. Then this is probably the most like iconic and most dangerous type of villain, because for them, they hold no regards for anything that's around them. As long as they achieve what they set themselves out for, they move on to the next thing, and they're still going to continue being chaotic evil.
All right.
I think like just right off the bat, like some characters that you would think kind of fall into it, I think Orochimaru from Naruto.
Yep.
That one's a clear cut, like chaotic evil guy, because he fucks up the Hidden Leaf Village all on his own, right? Just to piss off a few people. But that's what we're talking about, right? Like, you are going to find every kind of character, every kind of series that features one of these alignments, one of these types of characters.
I mean, I think another example of chaotic evil character is you said you watched Inuyashiki, right?
Yeah.
That what is the name of the bad guy?
Shishigami.
Yeah. So Shishigami is chaotic evil because he no give no fucks.
No.
Like as you said, right, in the episode that we recorded.
He just walks into a house, sees that someone's cooking in the kitchen, and then bam, kills them.
Because he just wants to.
Someone walks in the house and sees him killing someone. Bam, kills that person too. Last person comes in the house. Why are you killing everyone?
Because I can. Just
because? Because I can.
Exactly.
And I will. So, like, no remorse whatsoever. Acts on a whim. Doesn't have to be, like, instinctive either. It could literally have everything planned out. I think those are the most evil. When you plan to commit evil. It's, like, what the most evil alignments you can do.
Right. Now that we have said sort of the different types of villains, I would like to take a step back and just comment on general observations that Will and I have seen in anime and manga when it comes to villains lately. I think one of the things that has been really popular is the villain outshining the hero. I think, I don't know, like, back whenever that whatever this time period that I'm referencing, it's all about the hero. It's all about being the good guy.
Everybody wanted to be Superman. Everyone wanted to be Batman. Now, hella people want to be the Joker. Hella people dress up as Team Rocket. That's just how it is now.
I mean, like, I don't give a shit that much about Ash, Brock, and Misty, but I kind of think that Team Rocket, even though
and
they
Meowth
blunder
as well, yeah.
Yeah, even though they blunder all the time, I'm like, that's way more memorable.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about in the beginning, which is like, there are going to be shows and series where the MC, the main like protagonist, doesn't stack up in terms of popularity compared to a villain, compared to an adversary.
So then another show that I talk about that I've watched and I quite like it, even though it's a guilty pleasure, is Overlord. Because Overlord is an isekai anime about the main character basically being an evil dude. But he is not evil in the sense that like he just murders people willy-nilly or just doesn't care about his underlings. No, it's the opposite. But, and ironically, the heroes or the people that try to kill Momong-sama is seen as, like, really twisted, even though they are doing this in the name of good. And the person that you're following ends up being this really evil person. And sometimes he does really evil things, but he's the person that you're following and you kind of root for him. So in this sense, the villain outshines the quote unquote heroes of Overlord. I think another thing that is kind of cute that has happened recently is villains in isekai.
Ah, yes, that one.
I just don't understand why all of a sudden in the past, like 4 years, like this is a thing. So for example, there seems to be a surge of isekais and villains in rather unorthodox ways. So, for example, Overlord is a villain isekai. There is an anime that's airing right now called My Next Life as a Villainess, All Roots Lead to Doom X, which is the second season of what we call villainous isekai. Stars, quote-unquote, supposedly a villain that tries to not be a villain. Then there is like a Yuri isekai that is a manga right now called I'm in Love with the Villainess, which is about the protagonist being in an...
Is this the one that was... that's a different one. I was thinking the Power Ranger one, and like that's a different one.
Oh, no, that's like Love is World Domination or something.
Yeah, that's it.
Love and World Domination
that one.
But that one actually looks pretty good. But I'm in Love with the Villainess is hilarious because it's about this... MC that's overpowered, but instead of trying to woo the typical love interest, she ends up trying to get with the villainess because the main character, she finds the villainess attractive and awesome and everything and follows her around. So it becomes this weird thing because the person has nothing but disdain, but then slowly changes over time, and also it's just like the MC's infatuated with her. And there's just like, I mean, how many light novels, if you just Google villainous and light novels, there's like 50 or something like that. I just don't know. I just don't understand. Do you, Will, have any idea why villains in isekai all of a sudden just had like this surge of popularity?
I don't know, man. I think it's, this is what I wanted to talk about too. Like, why sometimes villains are more memorable. I think it's just because of the fact that like, just as much as you can't have a hero without a villain, you just don't get like enjoyment and discourse without a villain either. So that's why, like, when you have a well-written one, and that's the thing with light novels too, they have to be well-written. So you can imagine that the writers spent a lot of time building these characters, building up their characteristics, their demeanors, the way they interact with people. Look, maybe it's just, for some people, it's just super easy to write about a villain in an isekai.
Maybe. I think also the other thing is we live in a society where being quote-unquote bad or quote-unquote evil is no good. Like, it is, you get punished not only by law, but you get shunned by society. You are outcasted, usually, all right? Right? Like, generally, you don't...
As you would expect, if you do bad shit, you get punished. And then that's the end of who you are. And then, you know, we make sure you get locked up.
And as such, usually a lot of people are either good or they obey the law and the rules and regulations of society. Therefore, reading about villains in isekai is like a double fantasy fulfillment, because not only do they get the isekai fulfillment wish fantasy, but then they also get to see the exploits and doings of a character that, for all intents and purposes, they can't do in real life, because it's, you get punished, or it's just not favorable to do ever. So that's how my theory on why villains in isekai has been getting a resurgence lately.
I just think that villains in general are just awesome. I think, like, when you think about shows that have, you know, a good villain and a good hero, I think people just like bad guys. People just like bad people doing bad shit. That's literally it.
All right, then. Then that goes into our last section before we do our break and go into spoilers, which is, what are the characteristics of a good anime and manga villain, Will?
Oh, man, there's so many.
There's so many.
God damn.
This might take a while.
Yeah. I think we'll just do a quick one.
We'll do a quick several ones.
Yeah. I think generally, like, as much as I say, like, oh, they have to be impactful, there's going to be certain things that they do that make... that are impactful. It's like, for example, like, you hear like the backstory, and then like you hear like the mission of a villain, of why they do certain things. Like, they could reach you on an emotional level, right? You start becoming emotionally invested into that person's story. You might not like what the villain is doing, because it's, of course, it's bad, right? Most of the time, a villain is killing people, destroying society, causing disruption and all that. And you don't want to vouch for it, but at the same time, like, you also remember that there is a human behind that villain. And so sometimes it's like, maybe you feel a little bit sympathetic. You might start falling in love with them, or maybe on the extreme side, and you're in such disagreement with what the villain's doing that you just end up hating them. You just despise them. But that's what the villain has done. The villain has created emotion within you, and therefore you're feeling a certain type of way. You have investment in this character that otherwise, like, maybe if you didn't, you wouldn't care about the villain. You wouldn't care about who they are or what they do.
And especially in these cases, if the villain gets their dues, their comeuppance, then you're like, awesome. I think two examples that are not spoilery, really, is Multi from The Rising of the Shield Hero, which is when she gets what she deserves, was just like, it was so satisfying. And I really hated that character, not because that character was a bad character, but there was just,
the resolution at the end, right?
I was so invested in like shitting on this character because I just want her to get it.
And then when they got taken down,
it was so satisfying. It was like awesome. Then I think Shinji Mato from Fate Stay Night is someone where if something bad were to happen to him, I would be like, yeah, you kind of deserve it, right?
What about other characters where you feel like you are so emotionally invested that you like really actually liked them, that when they fell, you're like, oh man, I feel bad. I know you're an evil guy, but I was kind of rooting for you too. Is there any that you have that you can say right now, or do you want to save some of them maybe for the spoiler
section? So I would say that there is one anime that is extremely good in blurring the line between a villain and an antagonist or whatever, and that's Shinsekai Yori.
That is a good show.
Yeah, it's a very, very good show.
Or in English, from the New World.
From the New World. I cannot tell you the character, but I'll definitely mention it in the spoiler section. But needless to say, they are characters in there that do quote-unquote evil things, but you can kind of see why. So it's not like they are necessarily like they want to go out and hurt people, but they're like, well, I kind of have to do it.
I think it's because of the show being that like the lines of morality and order are so blurred that it's easy for you to be on the wrong side at any time. That's what like I like about the show.
Yeah.
And then when you start seeing the extremes of those like of the spectrums of like of morality, of order, that's when you're like, whoa, shit just got really fucking real.
And usually these people, at least in Shinsekai Yori, have reasonable logic and motivation and reason to act the way that they do. Doesn't necessarily mean I personally as a person approve of their actions, but I can be like, yeah, I can kind of see that. Yeah, I totally like I get it. Like, if I was in your shoes, I probably would do that too.
Like, for them, it's like, they could be extreme lawful. They could be extreme chaotic. But there's still justification and reasoning as to why they do certain things.
I think another trait that is important for a good anime manga villain is having justifiable motive. And sometimes even good motive, but too extreme. So, I'm thinking, for example, of like, I'm thinking of like a certain villain in Princess Mononoke, because that villain, I understand why this villain acts the way that they do, but they took it too far. Or in Parasite the Maxim, there were several villains, some straight up just, I don't give a fuck, I just want to murder people. But some that kind of is curious or that is trying to understand what it means to be human.
And one of the other, I think maybe this could be a last one before we move on to the break and then into the second half of the discussion. Unpredictable villains or just major plot twists that like, you're just watching something and all of a sudden you're just like, fuck, that guy was a villain? Holy shit, that guy was a good guy? Wait a minute. Wait, I thought he was a back. Oh, wait, hold on. And then, like, when you start, like, seeing that duality, you're trying to figure out who that character is, you then start realizing that, like, all you're focused on is that villain, is that character. And as they start developing, you start seeing, like, oh, wow, there were so many red herrings. There were so many clues that let me, that could have led me to this. And now it's all come together, and you just get hit with that realization.
I mean, not just that, but when you get what you considered a good person who ends up being the villain, you kind of have this feeling of disgust, like, oh my God, like,
who corrupted you?
No, not just that, but also,
oh, wait, hold on. It's like, I actually believed in you.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're like, God damn it. Why? I felt like I was duped. I felt like I fell into a trap. But that feeling of investment and betrayal is precisely what the author, mangaka, producer, director wants you to feel, because that is how, by having relatability and invoking an emotional response from the viewer or reader, you are essentially doing a good job of doing a villainous portrayal, basically.
Case in point, emotions, that's what you usually do when we're trying to gauge how much we care about villains, right? Like, if a villain can leave enough emotional impact on you, they're going to be memorable no matter what. No matter whether they are the most evil piece of shit that you've ever seen, or maybe they're just, you know, someone who is trying to do right, even though what their image of what right is goes against everything you believe.
Can I just say before we go to our break, the unicorn in in villains, like the unicorn, like the rare unicorn in the villains, is Dio from JoJo, because sometimes a good villain just has to be meme-worthy. Like, there just needs to be tons of memes about you in order for people to appreciate you as a villain.
JoJo is, you know, the Dio from JoJo is absolutely one of the most chaotic evil characters you'll ever come across. But you just watch him and you're just like, I am amazed at this character. He's so funny. He's beautiful. He's amazing. He's powerful. But it's just like, you can't help it. It's like, I know what he's doing is terrible, but I want to root for him too.
I don't really know that much about JoJo.
But it's pervade.
But I remember. But I know Dio. Yeah. I don't really know JoJo, Joestar, or Jonathan.
Jonathan Joestar, Joestar.
I don't really know them as a character. But I know Dio. So that is a very good example of a villain outshining the hero, and just memes can propel you to. You know,
it's again, just the impact, right? Whether it's for funny reasons or whether for its emotional reasons, it's the impacts they leave on you.
Right. It's the connection, right, that you get. So,
yeah, you don't have to agree or like a villain, but they did their job. But you continuously remember and refer back to them whenever you talk about a show, right? That's the most important thing about being a good villain, that no matter what, the conversation of a series also includes them.
All right. So let's take our break, and then after the break, then we get into the juicy details of all the villains that we like in anime and manga.
Spoilers ahead.
Spoilers ahead.
Of our After Dark series. As always, it's still me, Will, and also Jason. We haven't left and forgotten about you, because we still want to talk about more anime villains with you. So we're going to be going into some more crunchy, potentially spoiler...
It's going to be very
spoiler heavy.
So just to reiterate, this is now the spoiler section of the After Dark, where we talk about anime and manga villains. I will now list out the series that we are potentially spoiling if we could cover all of it, but I'll tell you all of the series that we were hoping to spoil.
Just to cover our bases.
So first of all, in alphabetical order, Attack on Titan up to Season 3, Berserk, Bleach, Code Geass, Devilman Crybaby, Durarara Season 1, Fullmetal Alchemist or Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, Haikyuu, I think... Hunter x Hunter, Jujutsu Kaisen, Kill la Kill, Monster, Naruto, Paranoia Agent, Promised Neverland, the first and second season of Psycho Pass, Shinsekai Yori, and Tokyo Ghoul.
Yeah. Based on that list, you know that some of these villains are going to be incredibly good or incredibly memorable because they're sacks of shit.
So, if you do want to check out any of these shows, we highly recommend you to check them out first and then come back and listen to this section when you want to.
Or if you don't care about spoilers, listen ahead.
Exactly. All right. So, okay. Should we give a moment of silence for spoilers? Silence given. Okay.
And we're back. Okay,
and we're back. Oh, woo. What's the weather like, Will?
But it's still good. Still good. Sunny as hell.
Well, it's going to get painted red now.
Oh, man. We're going to be... Yep. Spraying the town with blood and gore and violence.
All right, so where should we start?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things we talked about, right, was memorable villains, things that, you know, allow for a villain to remain in the discussion of a series. Like, if we talk about a series or we talk about a new sort of manga or anime, you always go back and say, hey, didn't that character make the show? Oh, man, I really absolutely hated the fuck out of that character.
Oh, my God, I forgot. We forgot about villains who defected to the good side.
Nah, whatever.
Nah, fuck it. All right.
Those guys are pussies. Because you know when the villains become good, they're no longer as powerful as they once were. They almost always become, like, just B-tier heroes. And they're never the main character anymore. They've been relegated to side character.
So,
do you have any memorable villains you wanted to?
Tons. I mean, we talked about 18 different series. I'm just talking about which one you start with.
I mean, do you want to do it alphabetically?
No,
it's gonna be tough that way, right? Because there's gonna be some stuff we want to get through. Look, I think why don't we just start off with just one memorable villain, from a show that you've watched recently, or you know, the past year or two, and then we just run from there.
All right, then I will start from the bottom up. Tokyo Ghoul.
There you go. All
right. I think Tokyo Ghoul has a lot of terrible people and human beings in them, and villains and ghouls, but two are very memorable to me. One being the Madame from the auction house, right? Is it called Auction House? And then the other one is Torso, which appears in Tokyo Ghoul Re. Now, why single out these two when they're not really the main villains, so to speak, of Tokyo Ghoul or Tokyo Ghoul Re? The reason is because in the Madame's case, she just fuck shit up. She has no qualms of like, yo, I'm just gonna have this roided out dude just murder humans for my enjoyment. Oh, that Suzuya?
Juzo. Juzo Suzuya.
Yeah, Juzo. Yo, I'm gonna crush
you. You're a boy, right? Not anymore.
Yeah, I don't like it that you're a boy. I want you to be more beautiful, so I'm gonna crush your balls.
Man. And when she's saying it to him, he's just looking up at her and smiling. She's just like, okay. And then just like one of the most despicable, evil panels of the manga.
And then Tokyo Ghoul also has Mado. Now, not Akira Mado, which is the daughter.
Wonderful. Love her.
Which she's awesome.
Hot as fuck.
I was going to say that too. But Papa Mado.
Oh, man. Kurio Mado, the mad fucking scientist from the CCG.
Who cares about nothing other than the Quincy's. Murdered a mother in front of the child.
It's so fucked up that like before he kills the mother, he says, I have a very fine Quincy here. You might be familiar with it. I extracted it from your dead husband, who I killed before, and now I'm going to kill you with it. And then afterwards, after killing the mother and tracking down the daughter again, hey, look, I could dual wield now. I've got Mama and Papa here. They've missed you. And I was just like, wow, you deranged sick fuck. I know you're on the side of the humans and you don't want the humans to get eaten, but Jesus fucking Christ. This is way beyond chaotic. This is just pure evil.
And then there is the Torso killer.
Dude, people in Tokyo Ghoul be tripping. They're just fucked up, man. They're all just terrible people.
What the Torso killer did to Musuki was beyond fucked up to me. That was probably the most fucked up thing I've seen, which is saying a lot because Tokyo Ghoul is full of fucked up shit.
And Musuki also turned out pretty fucked up too.
Yeah, because of it. Just like turning into a torso and then kind of can't do much, and also like you're at the whims of a crazy deranged killer, you're kind of like gone. I mean, her mind did go into the deep end and she kind of became psycho, but Tokyo Ghoul is good, man.
Rest in peace, man. Rest in peace, Mitsuki's like innocent mind, forever gone. I actually quite like that we're going in reverse order, because now we move on to Shinsu Kaiori.
Fuck. Okay, so even though Will and I want you guys to watch Shin Sekaiori from the New World, we gotta talk about Squealer, man.
The thing with this show is that like there's so much like law and order in it that like any wrong move and they can seriously fuck you up. So you think it's like the education board in the show is like the main villain, because they're always like up in these kids' grills and all that and stopping them from doing what they really want to do, which is like be playful. We want to just go camping. And they're like, no, you went beyond the camping zone. So now we have to punish you. No, the main real piece of shit villain in the show
is
that fucking rat, Squealer. One of the only rat people that can actually speak and communicate with humans. And in the beginning, he's just like, oh, I'm just a simple rat, just trying to, you know, get through this world and, you know, do good by what I'm capable of. But it turns out, no. Once he starts gaining the kids' trust, it's like, you know what? Like, I know you guys are in trouble. Just follow me, and you won't be in trouble anymore. And guess what? They're in way more trouble afterwards because he betrays them so many times. But they keep falling for his bullshit because he has a way of speaking to them. Especially when, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. And even then, when they know he's such a piece of shit, they have to go to him. And he keeps exploiting them over and over and over again.
And the thing that makes Squealer a good villain is not only because of the fucked up things that he did to the main characters, but also because his motivation is, why do you, the humans, have all the power and us, the mole rats, have nothing? That is not fair. That is not, like, that's not cool, man. I mean, it's cool if you're a human, but if you're a mole rat, you don't, like, what the fuck, man? So, like, it's like the oppression, right? And you are fighting the resistance towards your oppressor.
You feel like he's trying to be as lawful as possible. He's trying to create, like, unity. No. Well, not necessarily unity, but equality.
Yeah, equality.
But when it comes to that point, like, equality means an even playing field, not taking away back everything from the opposite side and getting it for yourself. And that's essentially what he's been doing.
Right, but also I can understand his motivation from, like, a logical, rational standpoint.
Yeah, exactly why he's doing it. But I think the most memorable thing is his demise.
Dude, actually, he didn't have much of a demise. It was long and drawn out.
Being reduced to nothing but
a sack of flesh.
Just literally just sitting there just to exist. And that's all he does. And he cannot die until the very end when
Saki shows up and
Mercy kills him.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy. Should we move on to Psycho Pass?
Okay, so we're doing it in reverse order. Yeah, sure.
I think it's great. Actually, these shows I actually really do want to talk about. Maybe not the next one afterwards, but, you know, okay. Psycho Pass for sure.
So Psycho Pass Season 1's main villain is Shogo Mikishima, which is a villain who dresses not only in all white, but somehow doesn't register under the Sybil system. So then he can kill with impunity and won't have his score increase, right?
Yeah.
Because there's a very infamous scene of him on the roof.
On a railing.
On the, like, or like a spiral staircase or something like that.
And then you have the main character.
Her friend is being held at knife point, and she wants to save her friend, but all she can do is point the gun at Makishima, and the gun is like, nah, man. This person is not a criminal. Yeah. What are you talking about? And her just being like, no, man. She, my friend, who's innocent, is at knife point. Like, come on. But then,
unfortunately, things follow through. And she doesn't have a friend anymore. And then this is when you start finding out, like, there's more than just, you know, a system in place to keep people in track. Clearly, if it's possible for someone to break the system, to game the system, and just basically fly under the radar, no penalties, no punishments whatsoever, hey, something smells like shit.
Maybe it's the system that's fucked up. And in Season 2, it turns out that that's the case, because the Sybil system ends up being an amalgamation of minds of basically crazy, calm, to all sorts of people, basically. And then they all make an assessment based on that, and that is the Sybil system.
It's almost like the jury system, I guess. Maybe it's just, you know,
and you know what, a metaphor. You know what the crazy part is oh, what's her name? Akira?
Akane?
Akane. Akane is like, fine, I'll give in. That's bullshit, but I'll give in. Because that's what she did, right?
In the end, right, like, what are you going to do? You're fighting against a government, like, a whole, like, judicial system that was created to essentially keep everything in check, to make sure everything runs smoothly.
Right. So if you,
and, like, she spent her whole, like, academic career building herself towards becoming an investigator.
But she was so disgusted And it was
this is it. This is the truth. And she learns how to deal with it in season one, and in season two, she's fully ready to take on it. She still has her.
And then she makes her deal. She makes the deal with the Sybil system.
Yeah. It's a fucked up world.
It's a fucked up world, man.
But Psycho Pass was a great series.
We should probably watch the movies and then Psycho Pass 3, right?
I'm still kind of hesitant, but why not? At least it probably would be better than rewatching all of Kogias all over again with the movies and all that. Should we go on to the next one?
Yeah, Promised Neverland with Isabella.
Great villain.
I just like the whole cat and mouse kind of tense moments. I mean, say what you will about
Season 2.
Well, I can't really say because I didn't watch a single minute of it.
But I did. It sucked.
Right. But Isabella was like her smile is just like, oh, you conniving, scheming person.
And the music, the sharp violins that, you know, correspond with her smile as well. You just felt so uneasy. Anytime she was on the scene, even if she was caring for the children, you knew damn well that she was ready to pick up one of those kids and send them to the monsters.
And then in the end of season one, when they managed to escape, I think like that's actually a really cool moment because she kind of like she lets her hair down literally, and it was just like, well,
be free.
That was pretty good, guys. Like you got me good. Like I thought that was actually a really cool moment. Don't you think so?
Well, I mean, she also had her own flashback, right? Her own flashback of her growing up on the farm and. Not in the house, and then you know her becoming a madame of the house.
Yep.
So she's probably thought too, like I wish I could escape, but I didn't, and I was rewarded for it.
So I'm gonna let you escape. Good luck out there.
Yep. Now the next one, I think, is probably one of the most well written and also the most surreal, like adversaries slash like villains in. At least in the manga that we wanted to talk about today. And in the anime we wanted to talk about today. And the anime is Paranoia Agent.
Now, remember way earlier in the non-spoilery section, the beginning of the non-spoilery section, we talked about how an adversary or a villain doesn't necessarily have to be a physical entity. Sometimes it could be a thought. Sometimes it could be a manifestation of a belief.
It could even just be the fear of something.
Exactly. In this case, it's kind of both. Because in Paranoia Agent, it's about the boy with the bat. The crooked bat.
Little Slugger.
And how he goes around changing people's lives, in quotes.
Basically just terrorizing the neighborhood.
Right.
Like, and you'd be walking down the street, boop, bopped you in the head. You're on your way back home after a night out, boop, bopped you in the head. And then every single time the victims in this series come back and they try giving like their reports and talking about what they saw, they always refer back to the boy with the crooked bat.
Right. But then later on, the little slugger ends up not being kind of a terrorizing thing. It actually becomes way grander and scarier, actually, in my opinion. Don't really know how to explain it.
It's because it's all existential. It's all in like the people's heads. Everyone tries to manifest their fears and paranoia, and when it comes to actually giving it physical form, that's what they amount to. And like that's the sort of power that paranoia plays in this series. No matter what they're running from, no matter what they're scared of, it all manifests in the same form of paranoia, and that's why they keep featuring this little slugger. No matter what. Every single person who's a victim of some random attack, they'll always just say, yeah, I saw the boy with the crooked bat. And that's just the running theme. And that's why it's such a memorable villain, even though we don't actually see him as a villain. We just see him through the eyes of these deranged, delusional, sometimes just hopeless characters. And it's just so beautiful to watch. It's a crazy show. It's a really crazy show, and I liked it a lot. I mean, it's Satoshi Kon, man.
Now, let's time travel back to the good old days and talk about Naruto.
Oh, man. Naruto. Fucking Hidden Leaf Village, dude. Fire ninjas. I'm so ready to... Who you want to talk about, Naruto?
I want to talk about two people in particular. I want to talk about...
You're talking about Orochimaru, right? One of the best villains, right?
No.
No? Someone better than him?
Itachi... Uchiha, which is Sasuke's older brother.
No way. He was a villain too?
So, having this guy that you think is a villain for a long time, and having one of the main characters of Naruto, Sasuke, exacting revenge.
It's and like, at least from initial viewing, just slowly becoming a villain himself, being an antagonist himself.
Right. And then getting to the point where he could kill the brother, and he does. And then finding out that actually the brother was a good guy. And he just killed his older brother, who actually, instead of hating him, as in hating Sasuke, actually, like,
I've always loved you.
Like, super deeply loved Sasuke. And, like, he wasn't lying. Like, legit. And Sasuke being like, well, shit. Oh, but I murdered you. You're dead. Fuck. I guess I hate the world now. I'm going to be a bad guy myself.
I'm edgelord. I'm going to be edgy as fuck, dude.
Then you have the polar opposite with Gaara.
Gaara, yeah. Yeah.
The sand guy. Because he was a villain in the, like, early parts of Naruto. And he was just this guy who doesn't talk and just cruel and does, like, kind of basically permanently incapacitates Rock Lee for, like, a good portion of the series.
Real scumbag shit.
And then, like, does a complete 180 at one point, and then becomes the head of the Sand Village, and then protects everyone, sacrifices himself, and then when Naruto saves him, I remember this because in the manga it was like Gaara wakes up and like Naruto's like holding him,
yeah,
and then the panel is like behind Naruto's like everyone, and I was like so touched, like my teenage self was just like, this is like the best.
I think there's also one villain that we've completely forgot about, and then we should talk about Kabuto. The little guy, the guy with the white ponytail and the glasses.
Oh, the one who was Orochimaru, and then turns out that he is the real villain.
He's the one who orchestrated everything from the beginning. It's just the fact that he managed to trick, not trick, but like basically gained the trust of the first villain from the show, and then trick everyone else along the way. I mean, the fact that we're like, he just flew under the radar, the Akatsuki and Pain and all that, and they were like, yeah, this guy is just like funny. He literally survives all the way from the beginning till the fourth ninja war, and he just fucking like is just an asshole all the way through. But he gets his comeuppance, and he's stuck in like an internal cycle of Genjutsu, and he's just left there to, you know, rot his brain. Good ending for him.
Now,
should we go further back in time?
I mean, what makes a monster, Will?
A surgeon who decides to save your life, even though he was supposed to save someone else's life.
A politician, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But what happens when they're, you know...
So we're talking about...
A young German kid.
Yeah. We're talking about the manga and anime series Monster.
You watched the anime, or do you also read the manga too?
Never watched the anime.
Okay, so same here then. I read the manga along with you. Because I watched the first episode and then realized this is kind of slow, so I just bought the manga.
Yeah, but the manga is also kind of slow too.
Oh, but it's easier to pace yourself with manga because no matter what, you're fixed to 25 minutes every episode, right?
Dude, oh yeah, but okay, so I have never seen... This is like the one scenario where being emotionless and kudere is like the scariest thing on the human planet to me.
It's almost like Johan, like of the main villain, is almost... kind of like paranoid.
No, Johan, man. Johan, come on.
Johan Liebert. Johan Liebert. Es ist eine Monster. No, I'm not going to do her.
But
like,
please
the
don't.
Guy, like, literally, like, he's almost existential as fuck too, because like, he's not there like 75% of the time, but he's behind the scenes in people's heads, just causing so much shit. So much shit happens, and he's not even like walking around.
And that's the crazy part to me, because this person is such a good villain that him not even being there has caused so much distress and chaos and evil.
Oh man! Every single time there's that one character that has to walk up a set of stairs and goes to the roof.
I want you
to stand there. Stand there right now. We'll talk. We're just going to have a talk, okay? And then next thing you know, you just see the doctor just running, running, running. And it's like, there's no one there but the body. And you're just like, God damn it, Johan. You scary piece of shit. Fuck you. I can't believe he took another life. And then you keep watching, you keep reading and reading and reading. And it's just like, Johan. And you just like, when you do finally see him, you're just like,
that's it?
Fuck. This is the guy that's been terrorizing this town, this German town.
No, for me, it was like, this is the guy? Like, really?
Bitch, please. Come on, man. I can take care of him. And it's like,
and I was like, no. Turns out I was way off on that one.
What a wonderful manga. Yeah. What a great, great villain.
Now, when it comes to clothes, we would like to think...
I'm loving your segues.
We like to think that clothes make the man. But does it make the woman?
Manners maketh man.
Yeah.
Clothes maketh style and shit. Women make.
Yeah, it's not like we have an upcoming episode in the future where we talk about clothes and apparel, right?
Stay tuned.
But in Kill la Kill, I think that this show is interesting and memorable for two separate reasons. The first being that the kudere is fucking awesome. Sorry.
It's always about kuderes. Remember, you're talking about villains, dude. We're talking about
kuderes. She was a villain.
We're talking about kuderes.
Sasuke is...
Kurien?
Yep.
Sasuke Kurien, yep.
So she and the student council are seen as adversaries, antagonists. And then it turns out that, no, actually, they were nice, decent people, good guys. And turns out the mom is the really fucked up one. And the mom also has, like, not a daughter, but, like, a underling that has an eye patch that is just equally fucked up, too. And, yeah, I think the mom is super scary. Super scary.
What about Noi? The pink-haired, fucking, like, chaotic bitch that just goes around killing people?
With the eye patch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hella scary.
Hella scary.
Yeah, they tried to cut her, and blood squirts out, and she's still talking.
I mean, she just murdered everyone. No remorse. It's just everything with a smile on her face.
Yeah, man.
It's her job.
It's her job.
Fucking great.
Hey, man, life fibers, right?
All right. Yeah, clothing is crazy. But what's also crazy, Jujutsu Kaisen. Oh, that's crazy. That's a good show. Crazy good show.
What? These segues are so bad.
Are yours any better?
Well, I'm just going to...
Speaking of clothes...
Well, curse you, okay? Curse Jujutsu Kaisen.
Oh, right. You're going to curse me. Okay. Well, maybe eat your fingers while we're at it then.
Yeah, man.
All right, let's do it. No.
No.
Not eating your fingers. But we are going to talk about... We are going to talk about... Stop it, dude. Jesus, don't make things weird. We do want to talk about a specific villain in Jujutsu Kaisen.
Two, actually. Not one.
All right.
We want to talk about Mahito.
Mahito, who just does not seem to die.
It's like the sewn-up guy who, like, I mean, wasn't there one scene where he, like, goes into a movie theater with, like, and then there's, like, all these asshole people.
There's three assholes on one side, and then literally just, like, you might want to be quiet. Oh, you can't? I'll help you. And then just, like, transmogrifies their heads.
Yeah, and, like, when the investigators come back after the fact and see... Like what happened to three guys? It was just like, brah.
And then there's a witness there because there's another student that always got bullied by them. And then he's like, "Wow, what you did was amazing. I won't tell anybody." He's like, "That's fine. Just come with me. I know you need help. I'm going to help you." And he does. And then afterwards, says, "I don't need you anymore. I'm going to turn you into a pigman." And then he has him like actually turn into a fucking like into a he cursed him basically.
Yeah, and when he starts crying. When fighting Itadori, I was just like, no.
There's still a human in there. And he's like, come on, save me, help me. Nope.
And then the other one.
Trust strangers. Don't follow strangers in a movie theater, okay, kids?
The other one is Sukuna, which is...
Oh, that's so... It's hard to see that as a villain, but like again, we're so early in the anime that... Anything can happen. So we'll just say he's an adversary and then like he'll fit into the conversation.
Dude, he's powerful as fuck. The fact that everyone is so scared of him, like, you know, like, he is, like, OP as shit.
Yeah, the fact that it's like, no matter what, Itadori, even though he's the vessel, he's always like, look, I'll come clean. You do anything stupid, and I will completely kill you from the inside and take over. But right now, I need you, so don't fuck things up for me.
All right.
What a good villain.
Good villain.
I can't wait for season two. But wait, movie's coming out. Like, Jujutsu Kaisen Zero is coming out end of the year? So maybe watch that first, and then we'll watch the sequel season.
I mean, it hasn't been announced, but you know it's going to be announced.
Yeah.
So, next show is Hunter x Hunter.
When was the last time you watched? Like, how much do you remember from Hunter x Hunter?
Very little.
Right. So you, but you know Hisoka, right? The clown?
Yeah, of course I remember him.
The clown
him.
Assassin?
Yeah, of course I remember him.
Fucking good villain.
A really good villain. I usually hate clowns, but I quite like his character.
There's just something, because you just look at him, and you're just like, he looks like creepy.
And not just that, but like he's nice to Go, right?
Yeah. He has a very like vested interest in Go.
And it's like when he smiles and it's just like him on like his knees and it's just like, you know, like him just like smiling, being like, yo, what's up? And I'm just like, no, don't fall for it. Don't do this. Don't. And then
shit gets fucked.
Yeah.
Meruem as well from the Chimera Ant arc as well. That was a good villain too, because that guy was just like impossible to kill. The guy was just literally obliterating everything in his power. He's just like, his only purpose was to just grow stronger, just to find people that were as strong as him. And he didn't find anyone as strong as him. He did fight against the head of the Hunter Association, but even that guy essentially had to turn himself into an atomic bomb and create a cut in Meruem so that at least he didn't die upon impact, but instead he would die from radiation poisoning.
I have no idea what any of the things you just said in the past 20 seconds.
That's literally what needed to be taken. He needed to be taken out. He needed a literal nuke to kill him, and it wasn't from the initial blast. It was just from radiation, and he slowly died from that. But what a great villain! It was a disgusting arc as well. It was one of the most gory, violent arcs in Hunter x Hunter. And yeah, there is some violence, but like none that I've ever seen in the Chimera Ant arc. And you're not going to see anything else because God knows when the manga is
That's
gonna...
the real villain.
Yeah.
The
hiatus.
The hiatus is the real villain.
Yeah. Speaking of villains, what did you think about Sakurajima University High School in Haikyuu?
So one thing I would say about all the teams of Haikyuu, which is to say that throughout the existence of the anime, you learn a lot about these characters. And you, even though they are adversaries, the opposing team, you actually kind of care about and root for some of them even though you don't root for them in the end. But you're kind of like, yeah, I like these guys.
I hate it when teams lose. I like it when teams win. You just want the best for whatever, you know, the team is going through. But yeah. Then you
like
have
Abi Jose, yeah. Right? Like yeah. That setter. Like I like him. Dante Tech.
I like the wall.
Yeah. The wall is awesome.
But then you go to, I'm sorry, I said the complete wrong name. It's Shiro Torizawa High School.
Yes. That guy, the dude, is like awesome. The powerhouse guy. And then there is like Nekoma, right?
Mm-hmm.
The cats. That's awesome too. All those characters are awesome, but technically they are adversaries. They are antagonists to the protagonists. So I just put them in there because... Oh, they made me care.
Just season three alone, man, was just like you wanted to have nothing better than to see that school go down. Man, those 10 episodes was just
that great. Block. Oh, so that good. Block.
And the block finals and so the final good. Spike in the end as well. Just what a good show. Just like the next show, the Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood adaptation of Full Metal Alchemist, which is also derived from a manga. Called Fullmetal Alchemist. What a great show. But I have three particular villains that I wanted to talk about.
I only have one, so I'll go.
Right?
Tucker.
Yep, that was one of them for me.
So
you like dogs.
You like your daughter.
Have time to spend with one of them. You can't spend time with both of them, so.
But if you combine them.
Ah, hey, 1+1, right? 1+1 equals a chimera. Like, oh my god, what did you do to your daughter, dude? What did you do to your dog?
And yeah, so that's the part that is like so gut-wrenching for me. Was like, if it was like an enemy that doesn't really have an association with you, then that's one thing. But this was like your kid daughter and the dog.
The thing as well is like the Sho Tucker in the grand scheme of things
doesn't matter.
But that also was it also mattered because it just showed you how depraved and how evil some people can be when it comes to trying to get whatever they want, no matter what means they need to go through. Like, bruh, he wanted to try and create the perfect chimera. Why not try and use your daughter and your dog? There's so many other things you could have done, but no, it's like, I want to perfect it. That you would sacrifice the one thing that's closest to you.
I don't know. Like, I get... It's not I don't know.
I get why he did it.
I get why he did it, but it's like, don't. I never in a million years would I do any of that.
Fucking disgusting. Oh, man. The other one, yeah, it's just... There's no words.
It was just so memorable to me comparatively to a bunch of other
stuff.
You
can still hear her say, Eduardo. Like, that still haunts me. It's fucking...
And then Edward did what he had to do. I was just like, yeah, you do it. Yeah, like, oh, you did what I didn't think you would do, but you took the good way.
Rest in peace, little girl and pup. The other two villains I wanted to talk about are actually two of the seven sins. One, which is Gluttony, because it's just fucking terrifying seeing that guy eat everything. And just, yeah, dude, like, he was known for some very memorable killings. And the other one is Envy, because that guy was a fucking, well, that, them, he was androgynous as heck. I couldn't really tell.
And the thing is that, like, with Gluttony, he's drawn in such a way that looks kind of comical.
Goofy, yeah.
But then...
when he starts eating.
And you're just like, how bad can it be when you eat something? And, it's pretty bad.
Like, when they show Sloth, I was like, that's a pretty terrifying enemy. But, dude, like, I would root for Gluttony over Sloth any day, man. Lust was dope. Fucking King Bradley was dope.
Pride.
Wrath was dope. The little kid. The Greed was okay. Greed was all right. He was a turncoat. But yeah, I'd say Envy is probably one of the most memorable ones because he was just always there no matter what. You could not kill him off.
Now, I think on the list of villains here, the villain from Durarara Season 1 is probably the weakest physically. Would you say so?
Absolutely. I think like if you pit him up against maybe outside of, you know, the Shiro Toriyama school, like if he's not fighting against a volleyball team, then yeah, he probably is the weakest. Like you would imagine people from Tokyo Ghoul would fuck him up.
So
from Kill la Kill would fuck him up.
Izaya Orihara from Durarara Season 1. I mean, he appears in all the later seasons, but
he's just a dude.
He's just a dude with like a knife at one point.
And a nice office.
And a really nice office. But yet he's the scheming bastard that
he's not even Yakuza.
No.
He's just his own dude.
Yeah, he's just I guess he's rich.
But he has wiretaps everywhere. He has informants on every corner. He knows every movement of every person that he has interest in. And just nothing escapes him. He's just super perceptive, intuitive. And if he even sniffs any suspicion whatsoever, he already knows that he's got like five backup plans ready.
He just wants to stir shit up and does it so well.
And funny enough, like, he interacts well with some of the main characters too. Like, he's never like that bad. But when he does go bad, like, holy crap, half of the town is just fucked up.
Yeah, and like all the characters know that this guy is sketchy as fuck. But at the same time, he is not necessarily like, he is chaotic, like agents of chaos, but he's not like crazy. Like, he doesn't go out on a murdering spree.
Oh, there's method to his madness.
There's a method to his madness. So I like Durarara a lot. What about you?
I liked him. I liked the anime. I liked the villain as well. Would you call him a villain? No, you just saw him like a really, really like pain in the ass adversary. Yeah, I would give that one a good recommend. We really should finish up the sequels as well.
Yeah.
Now, the next show that I wanted to talk about has a really, really good villain. And I really like the show. I'm not sure if you actually finished it. It's a Devilman Crybaby, but you have watched it.
Yes.
So Devilman Crybaby is just, oof.
Is there a Devilman?
Oh, yeah.
Is he a crybaby?
he does cry a lot.
Well, there you go.
Later on, yeah. So the main antagonist slash villain of the show, Ryo, is none other than Akira's best friend. They start off in the beginning, like, just really vibing and understanding, like, the struggles of just, you know, adolescent, young life, growing up, and then some real crazy shit happens because he gives him a bunch of drugs to try out, and then afterwards he starts seeing monsters, he becomes a devil man. And then he starts talking about how, like, the world is doomed, and we're all going to be suffering anyway, so why even bother trying to, you know, live with the humans? Why don't we just ascend to greatness and actually just, you know, rule life as monsters? No, I can't do that. I have a family. I have a girl I really like. Oh, I'm going to kill them. I'm going to kill your family. And I'm going to send a mob to kill your girlfriend. That was... Oh, fuck me, dude. That was such a hard episode to watch.
I will say this, which is... Devilman Crybaby is one of the animes where when I see a person dressed in white, I turn the other way and run the fuck away.
And it's also just one of the shows where, like, you just see a character and you wonder how long they're going to live for. Because they're probably going to die within an episode or two. Ah, man.
Do you know who else died?
Do you know who else died?
What happens if you died as a martyr?
I hate you.
So Code Geass, right, God guys?
Damn it, Jason.
Lelouch is a good villain.
Lelouch the Britannia?
Yeah.
Yeah, his full name. I think that's his full name. Anyways, he's a dope character.
I love that character.
Super, super cool. Suave.
I have to be honest. When I watched the very first episode and he gets the eye, I'm like, that is too OP. What the fuck?
Yeah. And then you realize, actually, you know, this is a great power.
But not just that, but it almost is like, yeah, the eye thing is extremely powerful. But what's more powerful is, like, your tactical mindset, which is not the fantastical, mystical part.
In a way, it's almost like, for it's like Death Note. Like, you have this crazy superpower, this crazy weapon, but, like, you can't just be reckless with it. Otherwise, we're going to catch on, and then you'll get seriously fucked up. So, like you said, you got to be methodical. You have to actually plan out your usage, plan out your attack, and that's what happens in Code Geass. Like, the guy is just trying to create a new society, a new world where... You know, order is done according to what he believes is the right way to do things.
And his ascension and downfall is...
All planned by himself, actually.
So beautiful, actually.
The fact that, like, he basically creates, like, a whole new society and has a whole new following and then realizes, this is as far as I'm going to go, and there really is no way out. So, I have to do this. And basically plans his own assassination.
It's crazy good. Like, crazy, like, I know, like, why would you want to, like, put yourself in that corner? But also, at the same time, it's like, bravo, right?
I think for him, too, like, he knew damn well if he was to carry this on, it would be much worse. So he might as well just find a way where he can exit and give everyone else around him a chance of survival.
Okay.
I think, like, honestly, it's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, anime endings of all time.
Right. Now, Will.
Do you know what other show?
No. Will.
Ended
Will.
Much sooner.
Will.
You know what was a terrible show that I wish had ended when it needed to? Bleach.
So, Will.
No, you have. You've lost your privileges for segues.
I'm gonna paint a picture. You ready?
No.
So imagine.
I didn't say I was ready.
Imagine you had a sensei, right, or like a senpai that is extremely friendly and nice and cares for you.
Charismatic.
Well-spoken. Everyone respects him. You respect him. He respects everyone. He's just good.
And he stabs you in the stomach.
And then just is like, oh, yeah.
And he lets his hair down, too. It's like, ah.
Guess what?
You thought it couldn't be more beautiful?
Aizen. Motherfucker.
Bleach.
I mean, it's...
Here's the thing. Bleach, up until the Soul Society arc, was a great show. A great manga. And then after that, I think it was just like, well, we want more of this. And then the guy's just like, okay, well, I guess we'll just give Ichigo more powers. And it just ruined it. But up until then, like, up until the Aizen reveal and all that, man, that was a it's a good show. And it helped that having like Aizen as a villain was just even better.
And I was of that age where having that kind of twist was so impactful to me that I was reading this manga in Chinese and then all of a sudden see this and flip the fuck out and kind of was like looking around and pointing to the manga as if like telling people to like, are you seeing this?
Oh my God. He did a thing. It's like, okay, kid. Right. Cool.
Wasn't there like a thing in Bleach where with Aizen where like there was a guy who gets stabbed with the sword up in like on like really high up on the wall?
I vaguely remember.
I just remember something like that where I was just like,
I just remember a lot of flower petals and ice dragons and shit like that. But like you would ask me like to go back scene by scene of Bleach, I'd have to recap it. Good thing it's all on Netflix, so.
Yeah.
That was a good twist. It's one of those things, too. It's like when you have that shocking moment of a villain where you're just like, wow, I did not see that coming, and boom.
And it kind of
forever remembered.
And it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Then that's like, no matter how much shit you talk about for Bleach, Aizen was a great
villain. Aizen was a great villain. Because you could say then, oh, you didn't see it coming out of nowhere. Well, then you can just pull twists out of thin air. But it was done really well.
It literally was just like, it flowed so well. When it did happen, you're just like, yeah, this is dope. This is awesome. Wait, is he a villain now? Wow. Wait a minute. I did not see that coming. That's it.
But what if
It wasn't like they weren't blindsided by anything. It literally was just playing along as if he was just a regular guy. And then he said, yeah, well, I'm going to stab you now. Oh, damn. Villain.
But what if you're just a straight up evil person? Just evil. Just that's it. There's nothing redeeming about you.
If you're talking about...
Well, yeah, with Aizen in the beginning, too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But Griffith from Berserk.
Man, I think it's finally... Yeah, I think enough time's passed for us to be able to talk about Berserk. Let's talk about it. Griffith.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, it's... I think... The story he's written was amazing. And it helps that he also created one of the greatest villains in manga history as well.
Griffith was just like, fuck.
I need to reread Berserk all over again just to take everything in and just see the evil.
I was so mad. And the worst part is Griffith just kept getting more and more powerful. And there was nothing I can do to stop it as a reader. And I was just like, well, I guess I'll keep reading. Maybe he won't get stronger. Oh, wait, he did get stronger.
Are you up to date with Berserk?
Not even close.
I know one of our friends is.
Don't say it on air.
We're not spoiling his name.
But man, Griffith, I just thinking about it was like, you put your, should have been your best friend's girlfriend in such a mental like deterioration that like she is now like has like a mindset of like a toddler and has like severe PTSD and just no disregard for everything.
That's just one of those things where it's like half of the villains that we have, they're not just like agents of destruction. They're not just creating chaos and, you know, just actually exerting physical damage on people, but these are people that literally get down to your psyche, get down to your mental, and just destroy you from within.
Right. It's like, oh, you can break my arm, but at least it will heal, but mental scars don't heal as fast, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's very much that whole dumb thing where sticks and stones may break up my bones, but words will never hurt me, or whatever it was.
Yeah, that
is... Like, no, that's bullshit.
That is bullshit.
Words are fucking terrible, man. You can really do some damage to somebody by saying the wrong things.
And our final series that we'll talk about, Attack on Titan.
I quite liked it going from reverse order. I think if we did it the other way around, it wouldn't have been as impactful.
Two villains in particular.
Up to season 3.
Right.
Yeah.
So the first one is Kenny.
Kenny Ackerman.
I have to say, though, what a villain.
Yeah.
Very short-lived.
Douchebag.
But what a douchebag. And he's good, too. As in good as in, like, very capable.
Because up until then, right, had run three seasons. We had seen all sorts of betrayal and chaos. And he just came in and said, oh, I'm going to turn that shit to 11 and just really flip shit up upside down one more time.
Like, at this point, you have fought. Like, the characters have fought against titans, have fought against, like, these mammoth people.
You fought against a government as well.
They have been betrayed by their comrades.
Left for dead outside the walls, only to scurry back with whatever scraps of sanity they had left. And then they go back in, and then they find out that this asshole has to show up.
This guy who has no titan powers. This guy who, for all intents and purposes, is just a...
It's just a man with a gun.
A man with two guns.
Two guns.
And an air maneuver gear. So it shouldn't be a problem, right? No.
No.
Dude is a hell.
It was way worse.
The fact that it was just like Levi was kind of like, no, guys, you don't understand. Like, this guy's bad business, bad juju. And everyone's like, dude, it's just one guy. And literally.
And then they all die. The villains here, antagonist, anti-hero, chaos, agent, whatever, they're all wonderful in their own right. There's quite a few other villains that we might want to talk about sometime in the future.
We're not going to mention the last villain of Attack on Titan, as in, like, the other villain on Attack on Titan.
What, the government?
Zeke.
Sure. Okay.
Okay, you know what? Nah, fuck it.
Baseball, yeah.
Let's throw shit.
Yeah. Oh, man. To be fair, though, because of Zeke, created one of the most, oh my fuck, one of my watching scenes in having to choose between Erwin and Armin. That was, oh, fuck. Like, it's not hard to see why season 3 was so goddamn good.
I still haven't finished it. Of course, the manga, I have surpassed it, but yeah. I didn't finish season 3 yet.
I'm up to date with the anime, but now that the manga is officially, like, done, then, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go and maybe wait or actually just go and read the manga.
I think we should wait. Yeah. I'm going to wait because it's so close to be done.
True. I hope they finish all and don't just tease us with a movie at the end. So yeah, that was essentially like a quick rundown of some of the most memorable villains that we've seen, whether in anime or manga form. Is of course not a definitive list. There are going to be some that, according to you or to others, that you might feel is more impactful, more memorable. But the thing that we wanted to talk about remains the same: that these villains all played a part in our memory of a specific series, and without talking about them, it just feels like we're not doing the series justice.
And if you feel that our choices were not great, you can always email us or contact us and tell us how wrong or right we are.
Yeah, kiss my ass, though. Squealer is a terrible, terrible human being, mole rat thing, and he deserves to be in the definitive list of worst, most cruel, most bastardly anime villains of all time.
All right. We're ready to wrap up?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay. So, that is the end of our fourth episode of The After Dark. You can always reach us through our email at gapalette@gmail.com. That's gapalette@gmail.com, all lowercase, all one word. You can also you can also contact us on Twitter using the handle @paletteGood. That's capital P and capital G, all one word. We have a Facebook page at www.facebook.com/paletteGood, capital P, capital G, all one word. We also have a website, and we encourage you to check it out. You could visit our website at www.goodanimepalette.com, all lowercase, all one word. You can join us on Discord. We also have a MAL club. The invite links are in the show description, and if you don't want to look through the show description, you can always just email us, contact us, and we'll send it to you, no problem. Now, music credits.
Got some new shit today.
The first time to reveal our After Dark intro music. Our intro music is Shakedown by Low Five. Our break music is Up and Down by Toby Tranter. And our outro music is Sunset Dew by Lupus Nocte. Oh my god, I almost tripped on myself there.
Hey, you got there in the end.
Yep. Our music was provided courtesy of EpidemicSounds.com. If you are interested in using Epidemic Sound as a service, we have a referral link for you that's provided in the show description. So,
Look, I think do you still how do you feel now about the statement I made earlier, where more often than not, villains tend to be more memorable, more popular, I would say, than heroes and protagonists? Any change? Do you still feel the same way how you felt earlier, or maybe you start to understand like where I'm coming from?
I mean, obviously, I understand where you're coming from, because embracing villains more than heroes is not necessarily a controversial one.
Yeah.
So I get that.
It's also not like I'm not just rooting for the bad guys. This is the cool thing to do. No, it's literally because of the fact that the villains we talked about today, and probably for all the other episodes we do, they're really well-written characters.
The way that I would say it is I don't like villains more than protagonists, but that is precisely the point, which is to say, if you could get a rise out of me, an emotional response, a gut-wrenching, heart-wrenching feeling out of me due to a villain and his or her or its actions, you did a good job.
Yeah, and by popular, I'm also trying to say that like it helps to ascend my appreciation, my love for the specific series. I do not idolize any of these villains. Maybe some, but at the same time, like I do know that they get up to some real batshit crazy fucking shit. So I'm not crazy. I don't want to fall for crazy. So,
I mean, would you date Lady Madame?
I think she would have other things for me to do.
Would you date the mom from Kill la Kill?
No. Would you date Nui from Kill la Kill? She's smiling all the time, at least.
Well, would she kill me?
It depends how she's feeling. But she's always happy, so it's always hard to tell how she really is feeling.
Look, if a yandere doesn't kill me, then I'm more okay with it. Doesn't mean I'm completely okay with it.
Speaking of yanderes, you really don't think that Yunogasai is a villain?
We didn't.
She's a villain already. We already know what the whole point of her being in the story is. Is she just crazy? Just chaotic? Is everyone just a villain in the show?
Who are the good guys in life, Will? Aren't we all just terrible human beings trying to make it out alive? Aren't we all just trying to counter the force? Isn't it everything just positive and negatives?
We all just put our pants on one leg at a time?
We put our socks on one leg at a time, unless if you're an amputee, in which case.
God damn it, Jason. Someone's... Oh, God.
It's okay. I worked as a prosthetic clinician. I could say that, right?
Yes, that's fine. Okay, cool. All right. Good cover. Anyways, thanks very much for listening to this episode. Please do check out some of the shows that we listed earlier.
Although if we spoiled it, there might be a chance that by the time you listen to this part, you have already watched it. So
yeah. So basically, like, if you made it this far, congratulations. If you were spoiled along the way, we told you so. So,
but don't let that deter you from not watching the show, because then you can make your own decision as to whether or not you think that they are good villains.
Yep. So go ahead, watch some evil shit, and then maybe, hey, come back to us and let us know what you think are your favorite villains. And if there's any stuff we didn't cover, let us know. We can go check it out.
Yeah, I think that covers it.
Right. So you guys, enjoy the rest of your week. We will catch you very soon. Hopefully, well, first with a regular episode, but we'll be doing another AD in a couple of weeks. So hopefully you will get that sooner or later.
It's a good one, too.
It'll be a very good one. We'll catch you guys soon.
Bye. We'll be right back.